One of the great things of doing these shows on location is you get to meet people face-to-face, and occasionally we run across, I call him the boy creative genius who now is no longer a boy. John Greenwald, how are you?
I'm good. I still like to think I'm a boy in a way.
It must have been a great John Greenwald Sr. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, that's my dad. Actually, it's not a legal name. The junior is not legal. I had to adopt that when I was 15. My dad, who is also John Greenwald, again, not officially a senior, worked for a defense contractor. He worked for Boeing, worked on the space shuttle. And what I found out after, worked on a couple other programs as well. So I didn't want the government and military to think that I was requesting all this top secret information and I was my dad.
You'd be his dad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I didn't want him to get in trouble. So I adopted the junior on my name, and I would put my high school student ID in every Freedom of Information Act request I would send out. So that's
now,
how I...
As a high school student, you refine that to a fine art. I think you were doing as well as anybody getting information.
I appreciate that. Yeah, when I started when I was 15, it was quite a learning process for sure. The Freedom of Information Act, I'm telling you, is not easy to really use. The process is simple, but all the games that the government plays, the military plays, I just got an article published about 5 months ago that says that was about me waiting 11 years for one document to come. That's a long time to wait for a single document.
It certainly is.
Yeah, so...
And you wonder how they justify that.
They can't.
Against the law.
Yeah, they can't.
The law is pretty... explicit.
It's pretty cut and dry in that they've got 20 business days right now to respond to a FOIA request. But that means that they could just send you a postcard or send you an initial response that says, we received your request, we're going to process it. The issue then is now, once they responded, they can wait 11 years if they wanted to, if not longer. There's a couple active Freedom of Information Act requesters that I stay in frequent contact with, and we talk a lot about what are the time frames of some of our oldest requests, and I still have a couple out that are more than a decade right now, and it's frustrating. So,
do you think when they created and Congress wrote this law, this is unintended consequences of the bureaucrats figuring out how, we'll send them a postcard, tell them we're working on it, forget it, or do you think they knew that to begin with?
Well, there's... I'm always
looking for unintended consequences.
I mean, I'll be honest. I'm an optimist. I want to think that these are paid government workers that are overloaded and swamped with work. And, then therein lies my second point that, you know, as much as I want to be an optimist, you got to look at the reality that why would it take 11 years, 10 years to process a request? Mm-hmm. It just shouldn't take that a large amount of time. Even when some of the agencies were in their biggest case backload, meaning they were 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 cases in, 5,000 cases had to be closed before they would get to mine, you were still only looking at a few years. So really, I'm not sure why they take the time that they do.
I think because they figured out they can do it. But maybe
and they can get away with it, yeah. I mean, there's really nothing I can do except sue them and take them to court. I can appeal it and say that they're unresponsive. But what are they going to say? They'll say that they're processing my request. So the only option I have is to spend the money to take them then to court to make them answer in a timely manner. And again, when it comes down to it, if there's 3,000 cases ahead of mine that takes 9.5 years to process, I'm just more broke than I was when I originally started the court case. So that would be the only benefit to do that. So really,
any agency fast, any agency work with you at all promptly?
You know, not. I wouldn't say anything sticks out as being fast. More. Yeah, I don't think fast and government go in the same sentence at all. I would say, though, that some agencies are a little bit better than others. I would say I have got pretty good luck with the Defense Intelligence Agency that some of, not all of them, but some of the requests will come back in a timely manner. The National Security Agency, though, I mean, they're tough right now for me to deal with. And the reason is they're playing games with the Freedom of Information Act with me, trying to charge me a lot of money per request because they think that I'm not a representative of the news media. And by their own words in the law, I run my own radio network, not only my own radio show, I produce, direct, and write for major cable television programs like History Channel, Discovery Channel. So I'm a producer as well. And write articles that get published in newspapers, magazines throughout the country safely and sometimes around the world. What part of that doesn't make me a representative of the news media? Now, I'm not saying that for ego purposes. I'm saying that by the book, I should be able to fit in this category, and they shouldn't charge me what they are. And the National Security Agency...
Have you ever appealed that?
That's the process that I'm at right now. Okay. The appeal has gone on for well over a year. I think it's about 2 years now. They promised me a response by last September in 2009.
When you appeal something like that, where does it go? It doesn't go to the court there in L.A.?
No. Well, at the appeal level, it doesn't go to the court yet. That's the third step. Mm-hmm. At this point, I can legally take them to court to make them finalize my appeal, because it's getting ridiculous. They told me again in September 2009 they'd have an answer for me.
So any federal court, or that you got to have jurisdiction?
I can file in Southern California.
Okay.
And so I'm kind of looking into that right now and exploring how I can really do that. Again, it's money, so I'm not sure how much I can really afford that to take the NSA, and in fact, it would be a lawsuit that would take the National Security Agency, the Department of Defense, and the Central Intelligence Agency to court. I would do it all under one case, and the reason is because the CIA is trying to charge me $250 every time I write them a letter. That is ridiculous, and there's absolutely no grounding for them to do that. So going back to my original thought, the Freedom of Information Act process is very simple and should be that. Unfortunately, it is so complicated and convoluted with all of their games and, hey, let's make Greenwald pay $250 every time he files a request to the CIA or we'll throw the request out. That's ridiculous. That completely cuts off the CIA.
Political route to find out why are these bureaucrats taking this long to your congressman or something?
Yeah. In fact, Senator Dianne Feinstein years ago, probably about 10, 11 years ago, Senator Dianne Feinstein went to the Central Intelligence Agency on my behalf, and she wanted to make sure that they were going to respond to my request. Now, of course, the CIA responded, and then a couple days thereafter, they wrote me another letter and said, we got Senator Feinstein's letter. Our letters crossed in the mail. We were absolutely responding to you. There was no need to contact her.
Likely story,
right. So Senator Feinstein, you know, was gracious enough to do that for me. Now I've got a more complicated problem. Now they're putting me into this category that I shouldn't fit in. Now I don't have any option but to take them to court. I went to Senator Feinstein again about a year ago, and she won't respond. So unfortunately, she helped nine years ago. She won't help anymore.
Well, maybe they got to her since then.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, maybe they just don't want her to help. I don't understand.
You really laid it out last night in your keynote speech about this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you talked about?
With the Freedom of Information Act?
General speech. You talked about the U.S. government.
I started with the U.S. government because really what I tried to do with my presentation here is kind of lay the groundwork for evidence that the UFO phenomenon, number one, is real. I think anybody can conclude that, but what are they? And that the real only logical explanation for the true unknown cases are that they're extraterrestrial in nature. And my forte is obviously government documents, so what I did in the presentation is bring up a lot of the documents that you can sometimes read and sometimes not read, meaning they are completely blacked out in some cases. There are thousands of examples of that. And then in other cases, you can read amazing UFO stories that you just have to scratch your head and go, okay, if they're trying to tell me in one breath that they can explain every UFO case out there and that they don't investigate them, and nearly a decade thereafter they have just one case that you can pull out that absolutely defies any logic that we know of even in 2010, it makes you really kind of wonder. And so I kind of take the audience through a journey of laying that groundwork, again, starting with the government, talking about the Freedom of Information Act and the games that they play, talking about the documents that have come out that have corroborated other UFO cases, that one UFO sighting in 1985 that yielded a little piece that he had obtained after it fell off of a UFO and it stayed in his trunk for a decade and his attic for a few more years thereafter, that documents from the 1940s labeled flying saucers from Denmark has an object almost identical to this man's that was found 40 plus years later. So it's a fascinating topic when you really get into all the pieces of the puzzle when you talk about the government and the documents that they've released. So then I also talk about my experiences with the media. As a director and producer, you know, I always try and dispel the myth, even though I didn't get into it that much in this presentation, but dispel the myth.
I want to hear about this.
Yeah, dispel the myth that there is a conspiracy or a cover-up when it comes to television and putting UFO information out there. I don't believe that. I've been a producer long enough now, produced well over 10 hours worth of UFO programming for History Channel, and even outside of the UFO realm, but for very controversial topics. And there's never been a phone call or an email or a letter from a network executive going, by the way, John, you're a little bit too close to the truth here. Back off a little bit. It's quite the opposite. If we have evidence to show, and it's legitimate, if we can put that on screen, they'll absolutely go for it. It's quite the opposite.
Yeah, that's my experience, too.
Yeah, but I think what we truly see, no offense to my colleagues in Los Angeles and Hollywood and New York, is that you really see the stupidity and ignorance of a lot of the producers out there when you see a UFO show. I've seen firsthand producers, you know, come in and they've never produced a UFO show before. They've only heard the term UFO on their cable TV once or twice.
Yeah, hey, it's hot, let's do it.
And so in some of their defense, it's very hard to get into this field and make sense of it. It is. I mean, it's 60-plus years of research from different mindsets and so on and so forth. So that, in that respect, it's very difficult. But in the other end, they just want to make an entertaining show, and for them, it's making fun of the topic or just doing the brief overview of some of the stuff we hear about all the time. That's why we hear the same stories on TV, because they can't go any deeper. They don't go any deeper. So really, it's ignorance. It's not a conspiracy or cover-up. It's ignorance. I'm very lucky. I come from the UFO community, fell into producing and directing, and was able to kind of get beyond those surface cases, again, those ones that we hear about, and talk about the cases that really aren't heard about on TV. And again, I bring up the 1985 case, the Bob White encounter, and anybody can Google this. You'll come up with the photographs, and you'll even see references to the Black Vault because of the documents that their research team, they found them on my site, and then that's how we met. We've been you know, friends and colleagues ever since. So it's very interesting to really get into that evidence. And when it comes to TV, that's what I always try and tell people: hey, there's no cover up or conspiracy.
You got any TV projects in mind? It's a little slow right now.
It's very slow in Hollywood. The economy has.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, the economy has hit pretty much every part of this country, including TV. And what's very hard to give you an idea is that when I was producing some of these shows four years ago, we would have staffs of people, researchers, a couple people under me. I'm not saying we had an office full of people, but we had a couple people.
Uh-huh.
Now I turned down a recent job offer for a major network, and it was only because I had to do it by myself. I couldn't hire anybody. It was like they were going to give me maybe the office janitor to print out some stuff if I needed it, and that was it. I had to do it in about 25% of the time that I was also normally used to producing and writing these shows. So when you chop off, which they're topping off about 33% of the entire budget for these shows. It suffers from the top down, from the quality of the show to the workload and everything.
I think we reflect that.
Absolutely, because your choices on television are, you know, unfortunately bad productions. You know, it suffers. It's when you don't have the money to put on screen, let alone hire good people to make the show, it suffers. So that's my long-winded way of saying there's really not much going on for me in TV right now, simply for that reason. Now, for years, I've wanted to do a Black Vault television series, a show.
Seems like a great concept. I don't know why somebody has just thrown money at you.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I would be a firm supporter in that.
Right.
I think the issue with that is, in a production sense, it's very hard to make black and white documents interesting for television. Yeah. Now, the stories themselves are absolutely compelling. They're some of the best stories you could tell. Yeah, exactly. But with government documents, that's very dry. So to a network executive, I think it's a little hard to see the visual element. Could the show work? Absolutely. And I had it optioned out, and I'm just getting the option rights back this month. And so I'm going to turn around and try and sell it myself and do it right, because I'm kind of tired of trusting those that, you know, talk big until you sign the bottom line, and that's it.
We could talk for hours, John, but we have to move on here. Mm-hmm. But I want to ask you about your radio activities here. You seem to have pretty neat little, I want to call it a network, but it's on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
You may have some other stations downloading.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a pretty neat idea there.
Yeah. In brief, I about 6 years ago, I started the Black Vault Radio Network. And the Black Vault Radio Network was a collection of 39 shows that I was syndicating across the globe. It was an internet station, but you can go on and download on-demand radio, stream it, exactly. After that, though, to be blatantly honest, I'm one guy. It was very hard for finding the man hours to do that. So what I did was I redesigned the entire.
People don't realize how many man hours it takes.
That's right. It's very time laboring.
But you figured the shortcut and it's working.
Well, so far, I mean, it's brand new. It's called BV Media, which actually now it absorbed Black Vault Radio Network, but also I'm able to stream online lectures, and on there it's packed full of free radio, just like before. And there's also some pay-per-view or pay-per-listen content where people can, you know, for a nominal charge, then download exclusive content. So it's a concept I hope that works. I'm really kind of going to focus on the radio, get that up and running, but also the videos and lectures. You can do documentaries. You can stream whatever you want on there for pay-per-view. And again, there's free videos as well. But the concept is that if you want to attend a symposium like this, but you may not be able to go, I would be able to get these lectures online, and for a nominal fee, they can download it instead of spending the plane ticket and the travel time and so on. So that's what I'm trying to do.
And you have any interesting news breaking on blackvault.com?
You know, nothing that sticks out. I've really focused on the media portion right in the last few months. Documents are still pouring in.
All of those things are well worth going and looking at.
Yeah.
Website, don't misunderstand me.
It's.
But I thought you might have some top secret thing.
No, nothing that sticks out.
He's saving it for himself, folks.
Yeah. Yeah, you just got to log on and see what's coming.
Thanks very much, John.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. My pleasure. And, good to see you again.
We need to give that URL for the radio project.
Sure, sure. If you just go to www.theblackvault.com, you'll see a radio tab at the top. Just click on radio, and you'll get right into it.
And you didn't have any Secret Service men visiting you last night after your speech, huh?
No. I was pretty lucky. Yeah, I hope I make it home back to L.A.
Has that ever happened to you? It hasn't me.
No. and I will say this quickly because I know we got to go, but it being the 9/11 anniversary, after 9/11, a lot of documents were reclassified. And I've researched, again, biological weapons, chemical weapons, even away from UFOs, a lot of other different topics. And what happened was all these documents pre-9/11 were considered declassified and not necessarily a threat to national security. They rethought that whole process.
They used an excuse for all of that.
Yeah, and I was expecting someone at the door.
These people running these agencies have never had a secret they didn't want to keep.
That's right. Yeah, and you know what? After that, I truly thought I would get a knock on the door about documents that I had. I mean, let's face it, you got 400,000, 500,000 pages of documents. 9/11 happens, and they're starting to reclassify a lot of material. I was kind of worried that, you know, it'd be a knock saying, hey, look, we've got to take these documents. You've got to pull them offline. They're classified. They've never bothered me. And I'm not sure if that makes me even more worried or made me breathe a sigh of relief. I'm not real sure.
Kind of like the Las Vegas Review-Journal has been suing every website in the country over using things. Well, I you know, they're saying you couldn't attribute things. You had to fail,
yeah.
Basically. And we do a lot of Las Vegas stuff, but they never bothered me.
Yeah.
And they bother a lot of other people.
Yeah.
I have do have some permissions from them on certain stories, so maybe they got me by. I don't know.
You know, that copyright stuff is just getting out of hand, I think. You know, why would you not allow somebody to redistribute with full credit? You know,
we want people to take our shows and link everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I've got no problems with that whatsoever when somebody wants to, you know, redistribute some of the content.
The limited thinking of people that don't understand media in the 21st century.
That's right. And it's getting only uglier, I can tell you that, because...
almost everything is.
Yeah. You know, years ago you were able to put on some, you know, artwork or picture or whatever into a documentary and not necessarily have to worry about it. As time progressed, now you have to have them sign a phone book just to use a photo for 3.5 seconds on the screen. So it's an ugly side of the business for sure.
Maybe it'll straighten up, but I don't think it will.
Yeah, we wish it would.
Yeah. John Greenwald, thanks very much.
Thank you. Good to see you again.
Daryl Sims is next, the A.N. Hunter. We're broadcasting from the 2010 Paranormal Symposium, the second annual one, and we're here at Angel Fire Resort in Angel Fire, New Mexico. Don't go away. If you are a UFO show buff, can't get enough UFO programming, we suggest you go to our UFOshowstogo.com website regularly. Bookmark us. We put all of our UFO programming there as a link. It's easy to find. Simply go to UFOshowstogo.com. It's available as a podcast, MP3, or Windows Media downloads. Either way, listen or download. We do our best to give you the latest in UFO news.